time for an elegant night out at the ballet with America's Most Cultured Podcast, The Pod People. I'm that rat bastard, Matisse Van Rossum.
Yeah, you are.
I'm Ben Sheets, but you can call me Dean Martin, and we have a Friar's Roast on our hands.
Wow.
Yeah, you fucking idiots.
Wow. Hi, I'm Cleveland Mosier, and if you want to kill me, you're going to have to drain me. I've been sitting on that the whole ride home.
Oh, all right. Well, we just got home from the theater where we saw the brand new Radio Silence monster movie, Abigail.
It wasn't very silent. It was on the radio either, man. It's fucking all fake. All fakes.
Well, of course, for those in the know, Radio Silence is the name of writer-director duo Matt Bettinelli-Olpen and Tyler Gillett.
No wonder they go by Radio Silence.
I know. Much easier to remember. Yeah. Much easier to remember. But we've talked about them several times on the podcast.
Yes. Yeah.
Years ago, yeah, we covered their fantastic Ready or Not.
Banger.
And since then, they did Scream 5, which we enjoyed, and then also Scream 6, which we did not enjoy. and thankfully, thank God for them that they have been able to get away from the mess that is
that
Scream 7.
Yeah,
well, I mean, in some ways, this movie feels like Ready or Not 1.5.
100%.
Very much
in
so.
In all the right ways.
Yeah, but I'm sure they're glad that they're, like, they don't have to deal with the studio system as much for this one as they did for
Yeah, well, Scream. Or at least have some more creative freedom to do another, you know, original concept. Ready or Not 1.5 is an apt description for this because feels very much like a sister film. A lot of the same themes, similar motifs, focuses on people trapped in a big old mansion trying to survive the night, except instead of trying to get away from some murderous aristocrats in this one, there our protagonists are on the run from a tiny little vampire in a tutu, a little ballerina vampire named Abigail. And yeah, I mean, shit, if you've seen Ready or Not, I think you can expect much of the same in this movie.
Yeah, it's basically the same exact, like, comedy horror tone as Ready or Not. Yeah.
Wonderfully used. The bits keep coming. I think we're all chuckling, like, throughout the
Yeah,
movie.
Laughing. I was not disappointed to return to the Ready or Not well. This definitely feels like more of a return to form for them.
We had a perfect audience, too. Folks weren't, like, super rowdy or talking throughout, but just occasionally someone would just get, like, a good, you know, in there, or, like, a little
There
something.
Was one guy a couple rows below us that was, like, hollering a little bit.
Yeah, but it was pretty fun.
It was pretty cute,
yeah.
Though. Like, yeah. It never, like, interrupted. It was always at the right time, and it never interrupted the whole thing. He wasn't one of those guys who, like, got a little, you know, over himself and just kept making, like, so that just happened jokes and shit. Like, it was always like, oh, shit! You know, kind of stuff. But it was pretty funny. Like,
yeah, the movie made a fair amount of its own, so that just happened jokes, but, I don't know. Overall, it's more cleverly written than your Marvel soy banter.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. Like, they're pretty well set up. I thought the meta humor, for the most part, was pretty good. And largely thanks to the delivery.
A lot of good actors in this. And again, better script, good direction. You know, the kinds of things that you need to make some of those cliches a little less eye-roll-y,
well,
you know?
Yeah, it works when the meta humor is they're actually just saying what we're thinking, and it's not like low hanging fruit.
Yeah,
like, you know, like, you gotta have both of those those elements, and again, good delivery to make that work in timing.
Yeah, I mean, in some respects, it makes total sense that they have this movie following Ready or Not as well as Scream 5 and 6, because Ready or Not is very much, you know, we're following Samara Weaving, and her character is the most fully fleshed out of that whole movie. And in Scream 5 and 6, it's an ensemble piece. A lot of people have fully fleshed out characters. And this almost feels like they're combining the influences of both in some respects, in that, like, there's a lot of characters that get, like, fully fleshed out and are entertaining and fun to watch. I mean, again, like, this cast is totally stacked. Like,
yeah,
it helps that well you have used. Great performers. You know, people like Dan Stevens and Giancarlo Esposito and Catherine Newton and Melissa Barrera.
Yeah, somebody else who's been able to escape from the clutches of the rapidly disintegrating Scream franchise. Yeah. That whole thing was pretty bullshit with her getting ousted from that production for daring to express some solidarity with the people of Palestine on her Instagram. But honestly, like, I think for her, for the best.
Yep.
I'm hoping that this movie will be well received enough that it will, you know, encourage other studios and directors to continue to, you know, hire her, because I'm sure this movie was done by the time that whole snafu
that's
happened.
That's the reason Radio Silence left, is because scheduling conflicts, they were going to do this instead.
Mm-hmm.
They both dodged bullets, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because what a fucking shit show that has been. Who knows if that movie's even going to come out at this point?
Yeah, I don't know.
They're back in, you know, pre-production on it with a new director.
Yeah, and they managed to wrangle Neve Campbell back somehow. I feel like they must have offered her, like, a lot of money, because, like, she left the franchise previously because she felt like they were not, like, paying her what she was worth as sort of, like, the heart and soul of that franchise. Mm-hmm. Can't say I blame her, but after all the fucking bullshit that that has happened with the pre-pro process for Scream 7, and then hearing that she's signed on, I feel like the studio just got fucking desperate, especially after Jenna Ortega left, and they, you know, and Melissa Barrera as well, so they lost their new protagonist. So they said, fuck it, let's give Neve Campbell whatever she wants to come back. But anyway, we're here to talk about Abigail and not Scream 7.
Yeah, I mean, that will probably be our final word on Scream 7. I don't think we'll be seeing it,
Probably not. Yeah. If it even comes out, I don't know. We'll see. Never say never, I guess. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Never. I said it.
Never.
Because you can say never because you can just go back on your word.
That's true.
Yeah.
We do it all the time.
Yeah. And infamous liars and skeeves.
Hey, you know what? That's the secret is that this is our podcast, and we can do whatever the fuck we want.
Yeah, including disrespect our viewer base. They love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you little pigs.
Don't call. We've been over this. We've been over this.
You said disrespect our
not like that. Like, there's a line somewhere. I don't know. Figure
emus?
Out.
How about,
what does that even mean?
I don't know, calling them emus. That seems a little better than calling them pigs.
Is it? Well, because it's nonsense. It doesn't mean anything. I mean, I wouldn't be insulted either if you called me an emu. I'd be like, why? And you'd be like, I don't know. Okay. And that would be it.
So, you little pay emus.
Because you're a big fat bird with a nasty temperament.
See, that's just hurtful and true. But, you know, let's just move on.
Liars and losers, the lot of us.
That's right.
Anyway, Abigail, yes.
Abigail.
So, I mean, this film is a pretty simple, high concept setup. A team of criminals are hired to kidnap a young girl, to hold her for ransom, to try to get a payout from her wealthy father. They take her to this old mansion out in the country. They're told they have to spend the next 24 hours just basically babysitting her.
What I love about the setup of this movie is, like, a lesser movie would show, like, getting the team together and formulating this plan. we're just thrown into it in this movie.
Yeah.
Which I love.
The movie starts with, like, yeah, action. with the kidnapping job. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we learn what little we need to about the characters at that point. You know, our classic criminal crew archetypes are set up. You've got the driver, you've got the hacker, you've got the muscle,
the bag man,
you've got the medic, you know, and it's like all of these things are set up, like, as we're seeing them performing their assigned roles throughout the job, very economical, and then we learn a little bit more about them once they get there, and they're sort of just, like, trying to pass the time, and they have Melissa Barrera do a little party trick where it's like they're each
great
person's like, yeah,
characters.
I'll give you $100 if you can tell me, like, one true thing about me.
Yeah.
And she basically just, like, very astutely reads each and every member of the party and, like, you know, knows what kind of person they are. So we get what we need to know about the characters from that, and there we go.
Yeah, well, and Giancarlo Esposito's character is, like, the one who sets up this this operation. He goes by Lambert, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he specifically says, don't use any of your real names. If you need names, here you go. And he just lists off the Rat Pack.
Yeah, I really like when he gets to William Catlett and he's like, you know, I guess that leaves you with Don Rickles. And he's like, no, are you happy about it? He's like, no. And he just leaves.
Not particularly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll admit that I did not immediately get the Rat Pack joke, just because though I am an elderly man of 30 years old, I'm not a million years old, so... That one went a little bit above my head until they called it out later.
I am a million years old, and I appreciated it.
I'm sure you did.
Yeah, well, it's good, too, because that's a good way to kind of play up Peter, who, the muscle character.
Yes.
He's great. He's so funny, right? Like, I just bring him up, and you start laughing. Like, he's really good.
Kevin Durant, not to be confused with basketball player Kevin Durant.
Yeah, the enemy of Little B.
Yeah, fuck Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant, who has the deep misfortune of looking a lot like Elon Musk, kind of a jacked Elon Musk, but
he looks much more handsome.
I haven't seen it. Yeah, I mean, he looks a little bit more human than that fucking pasty Afrikaner, but.
we're spiteful tonight.
Yeah, fuck Elon Musk. What's he gonna do?
We're spiteful.
What's
he gonna
very
do?
Cold take.
Can't,
we're taking shots. You know.
What's he gonna do? Shadow ban me on tweet?
On tweet?
On tweet? Yeah, he's gonna shadow ban my tweets.
You were saying Kevin Durant, who's cool.
Yeah, he's cool. He's good in this. I haven't seen him in anything since that that fucking Guillermo del Toro FX vampire show, The Strain. Did either of y'all watch that?
I watched the first episode, thought it was awesome, and just never got around to the rest of it.
Yeah, I read the books back in college, and the show is okay. It diverges from the source material, like, pretty severely in the third season. Whatever. We're not here to talk about The Strain. He is in that. That's what I know him from.
Neat.
Yeah.
Very cool. So, Giancarlo Esposito is like, all right, you pack of rats. I'm leaving you here. And Durant is just like, what? What is that? You know what I mean? Which is just a continued running joke.
That he's stupid.
That he's dumb and he's always missing the point. And it's just, it's always played, like, just right in time. Just because, like, you could... I've seen plenty of movies that, like, play up that character and don't get it right, and it's always the timing.
What I like is, like, they have two dumb characters, really. Because
they have a few,
Both him and Angus Young's character.
Angus Cloud,
yeah. What might be his final role.
I guess it was. The movie was dedicated to him in loving memory at the credits.
I don't know him. I don't either, but I thought he was great.
He was funny.
He was fantastic. Fucking hilarious. Kevin Durant is the muscle. And he's the himbo. He's always sort of missing the bit, but in an endearing way. Like, even after, like, they reveal that, like, he was a stone-cold killer and is, like, snapping necks left and right, like, you still kind of like him a little bit. You still kind of want him to do okay. I really liked his, like, almost kind of gentle giant approach. when they are all really played up to be like miserable people who deserve to die for the most part. Like he's very he's gonna hold. And then Angus Cloud is the driver, and how would you guys describe him? A Post Malone esque.
I was gonna say a Mac Miller style wigger.
Yeah, I was gonna say wigger. You might.
Are we allowed to say that? I don't. Well, unfortunately, no one in the room is an educator on that one, so I'm gonna not say it, and you guys could just bleep it out or not. Taste your
yeah, I'll decide in the morning, in the light of day.
You do a Google search on that one, but I ill advised, I would say. It's my two cents on it. But yeah, he's hilarious. I love his music choices are really fun. Like him, like kind of shittily singing along with the music when they're doing the drive at the beginning.
Well, it's the same song as before too, which is great.
Yeah,
he's trying to hit on Catherine Newton, who's like the hacker, she's like the cool hip wunderkind hacker,
like rich girl.
Yeah, right. Well, that's one of the things that Melissa Barrera intuits about her. She's like, you come from money, I can tell.
The funniest part of that is right before she does that whole shtick where she kind of reads people, Angus Cloud's character tries to do that same thing.
Oh, yeah.
And just gets it all wrong.
And gets everybody wrong.
Yeah.
That was a fun play on that. And then, of course, Dan Stevens.
Yeah.
Who absolutely...
Standout of the film. I mean, standout of every movie he's in. Really.
He's just so charismatic and delightful. Favorite role I've seen him in since The Guest, I think. I still think I prefer his role in The Guest, but like since
yeah, well, I also do prefer The Guest. Did you notice, I'm sure y'all caught it.
Barrett.
Well, later, when they've got Abigail trapped, the little vampire girl trapped in the elevator, and she's, like, revealing, spoilers, I guess, that all of the people there have, like, somehow wronged her, her crime lord father or whatever, and she, at that point, tells them all of their real names, and Dan Stevens' character's real name is Adam Barrett.
Yeah, Adam Wingard.
The combination of Adam Wingard and Simon Barrett.
I think that's a really kind of sweet...
I thought that was fun as well.
Tip of the hat. They're Guest fans because they used him in very similar ways. And
I think they're friends with Wingard and Barrett as well, because I know they both... both duos did segments in the first VHS movie. So I think they run a lot of the same circles. Dan Stevens is my favorite character in this movie, favorite performance as well. Melissa Barrera is great, but she's very much like your kind of straight character, no nonsense, resourceful, clever. She is the protagonist, but I don't think her character's that interesting. I think she's good, but Dan Stevens is a lot more. He's got
the most color.
Yes, color. Yeah, I was gonna say flavor. Yeah, but basically.
He clearly has the standout performance. I think we'd be remiss to not mention the titular Abigail.
Oh yeah, she's great.
Yeah,
it was weird because I don't know if it like it was just like a shoddily cut trailer or what, but like. In the trailers, I thought she was kind of bad. Like, I was kind of worried. But seeing the actual movie, I thought she had one of my favorite performances. Yeah. Yeah, I thought she was really good.
Yeah, charming, funny, scary. Like,
Alicia Weir is that actress's name, the young actress. I haven't seen her in anything else. But yeah, she did great. Mm-hmm. I thought the like some of the early stuff was kind of
you didn't see her in Matilda the Musical, Tees? You didn't see her in Wicked Little Letters? Wow.
Can't yeah. Fake I guess
fan. I live a big
I live no under
Matilda
a rock.
Head.
No.
He likes them little girls.
Oh man. I'll pivot and turn into a joke about the Trunchbull's been keeping me in the chokey.
That's funny.
That's why I don't know this. I haven't seen Melissa.
Funnier and much less edgy. I think that's good. She's delightful. And also something that I didn't like in the trailer, but thought was actually pretty great in the film, was her makeup as a fucked up little Nosferatu rat vampire. Yeah. I actually liked it a lot in context. Mm-hmm. In the clips, I wasn't a fan. They really focused on all the shots where she was CG enhanced, and I think that she looks best when it's just the fucked up teeth.
Yeah,
like she, yeah, mm-hmm. it's very charming. All of the vampire bits in this movie remind me of like that really nasty Nosferatu,
mm-hmm.
freaky. Their teeth are all like sharp and fucked up. It's not like the traditional like sexy fangs. They look like nasty rats. Bring back rat vampires. Like
I've been saying this.
Can't say it
I've
enough.
Been saying this.
So true, man. Like, yeah, and it's
well,
it's
we'll
great.
Be getting we'll be what getting more later this year when Robert Eggers Nosferatu finally comes
it's
out.
It's not the year of the rat, but it is to me, and I'm here for it.
Yeah, it can be the year of the rat. Why not?
Yeah, well, I don't want to. You know, moving on. So, the set is delightful. I love the one like big antechamber with the window.
The library.
The library, yeah. With the big statue of her and her father. It all
her and her father Jamiroquai.
With the big hat.
With his gigantic hat.
The guy who directed the Jamiroquai video where he's walking in the room, he went on to do something.
Yeah. Jonathan Glazer, Zone of Interest.
Yeah, that's right. It was Zone of Interest of all the fucking movies. Jesus Christ. I love that. It was just like peak Resident Evil bits. There were a lot of moments in this that, to me, just really captured the fun, corny aspects of a Resident Evil. I know Resident Evil didn't invent those tropes, but it did heighten those tropes to a certain degree. It's just a part of our pop culture language now, and I think this movie really leaned into that, you know, stuff. There's a lot of Scooby-Doo shit, too. One of my favorite subversions is when Abigail is bartering and she tells Dan Stevens that he could make his escape by going into the library and pulling the one of the books off the shelves.
And there will be none.
And then there were none. And
yeah, and then there were none. Agatha Christie.
He comes to pull it off the shelf and it's just a fucking book and nothing happens. And I thought that was really funny. And Dan Stevens just getting really mad about it and like throwing the books off the shelf and like swim. Oh, it's particularly funny too because she tells him without telling, like just isolate. She just tells him that. And then he goes back into that room where they all are and he pulls the book off the shelf and he's all proud of himself. And then
he's about to do a big reveal to open a hidden door that will allow them to escape.
And none of the other characters have context for it, which just makes it so much funnier because he's just like swearing to himself and saying, and then there were none. And they're like, what are you on, man? Like, what's up? Like, it's really funny.
There's a lot of good laugh moments. I love when they split up. Originally, Melissa Barrera's character is like the liaison. She's the only one who's talking to Abigail,
mm-hmm.
because that way no one else...
So she only hears one voice and doesn't know anything about everybody else who, you know, kidnapped her.
But, of course, things go sideways very quickly.
Yeah. Well, and she creates a little bit of rapport with Melissa Barrera at the beginning because Melissa Barrera reveals that she has a young son about Abigail's age, and she is already, like, generally the most protective of Abigail, mm-hmm. because she wasn't told that the person they were kidnapping was going to be a little girl, you know, and so she's the most straight up, you know, moral, ethical character. Mm-hmm. And she's like, you know, I'm going to do this job, but I'm going to make sure that nobody hurts this little girl. She like stops Dan Stevens from like punching her earlier. So she has that little bit of connection with Abigail that then pays off later in the film.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a little over the trope of, oh, I have a kid, you know, I'm moral. But I thought that they played up only enough for, like, stupid people in the audience to get it, and then they they really don't follow through on it, and or they don't then harp on it. But what I like too is that she doesn't just have a kid. I think I've seen some stupid movies recently that try to do the same thing, but the big mistake that they make is that they just have the character's exposition be moral. They don't have the character like actually do moral action throughout the movie, which she does constantly, and that it really helps cement her as like a hero.
I think what helps with that too is they also establish that Dan Stevens has a family and kids, and that he's also run away from them.
Yeah,
but unlike Melissa Barrera, he is like totally unscrupulous and not moral and ethical, and does not care about having left his family
behind. Makes him a good foil.
Yeah, right, it does, because, I mean, that is, you know, what he serves as primarily, as a foil, and eventually an enemy for Melissa Barrera.
Set up Dan Stevens as a former cop.
Yes.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And on the flip side, Melissa Barrera is a recovering addict.
Yeah.
Where is Dan Stevens actually from? In every movie I've seen him, he's from somewhere.
I'm pretty sure he's British. God. Yeah, I think he's English.
He's so good.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, because in The Guest, he has, like, a Midwest pitching, like, rural Southern, like, accent. And then pretty flat, like Americana. And then in Kong, which we saw recently, he's a New Zealander.
I think he's using his real voice in Kong.
I thought he was from New Zealand.
I don't think so.
In Skull, or whatever, that movie's already in the memory hole. No, he's pulling it out. He's from Queens.
Yeah, and he's got a little bit of that New York accent.
It's good. Yeah. It's really fun. I like the accent.
The trailers for that movie Cuckoo that's coming out. It seems like
he's doing another weird voice. He's doing a different weird voice. Right.
Oh, I'm here for it, man. He could do whatever he wants.
Stevens' year, man. Yeah. He's in a bunch of movies. He's doing a different voice in every one of them.
Fucking Dan Stevens' decade. Let's go. Let's just keep it rolling. Great. Put him in as many movies as you want. He's great. I can't get enough of this guy. So, but he's just
Honestly, like, I've never seen him in anything that I haven't really enjoyed. It's another reason why I'm kind of, like, surprised that, like, that FX Legion show never clicked for me. Because he's the protagonist in that.
Is he?
Yeah, he's Legion. And it's got Aubrey Plaza, and it's the showrunner is Noah Hawley from Fargo. Like, it's got all of the ingredients that I was...
It's
Cape Shit. That's I answered my own question. That's why it never clicked for me. It's Cape Shit.
Well, actually, Ben answered your own question. But,
you know. Well, I was working.
Yeah, you were
working.
You
were working it out in real time.
Sure.
I was working out in real time.
Ben, bullshit.
Yeah.
Interesting, I guess.
One thing I wanted to talk about a little bit is how great all of the practical effects are.
Just, again, very reminiscent of Ready or Not in a lot of ways.
They don't skimp out on the blood and gore in this movie.
No, definitely not.
It never feels, like, overly gruesome or gross, but it feels... Because the tone is still very comedic at the end.
Well, yeah, because the movie is funny, but like the effects and the violence is quite graphic.
Sure, yeah.
I guess there's
a distinction there. Right?
Yeah.
Like, for example,
and a lot of it is used comedically.
Yes,
the violence
exactly.
is used comedically well, even though it's like gross and macabre. Like it's used as a punchline.
Yeah,
like. Well, like
Angus Cloud, he's the first one to get killed.
I mean, of course.
Because dumb guy. But that kill scene is pretty fun. But he gets decapitated.
Yeah. Well, we don't actually... He dies off screen. We see him get, like, pulled off into the darkness. And then... And his, like, death scream, Catherine Newton, like, hears it upstairs. Mm-hmm. And she goes to investigate. And she's, like, looking around. and she doesn't see anything, and then she turns around, and all of a sudden he's, like, sitting there at the kitchen table. She can see from behind him, and there's a scene of him, like, pranking her earlier, like, trying to scare her
in
her
room. I really like that scene, yeah. Like, she's watching Woody Woodpecker, and she leans back in the bed, and from the darkness there's a light. It's a fucked up face, and he's wearing a mask, and he's just... And like, he does the whole, like, oh, it's just a prank, you know? Like, he doesn't actually say it's just a prank, bro, but he's like, oh, I was pranking you, and, like, they're playing that up, that goof, which is the way to do it, you know? Don't actually say it. And I like it too, because, like, she's just like, no, fuck you. She's really mad, and he's at the door, and he does this kind of charming thing where, like, he lifts the like the liquor bottle up, like, ah, come on, are you sure? And she's like, no, fuck you, get out. And, like, you know, like, she forces him out of the room, and I liked that scene. It was very cute.
But so she thinks, when she sees him sitting there in the chair, she thinks that he's, like, pranking her again, and she walks up and she, like, grabs him by the back of the head, and his head comes off in her hand.
That sequence works wonderfully because it is, because of the sequencing. I like they don't linger on it for too long, and they have her ask, like, are you pranking me again at the right time? Because that is, like, once again, like, a very played-up trope, that whole, right, like, you know, there's the doofy guy, and he's always pranking the girl, and then, you know, he gets killed, and the girl thinks that the killer is pranking her, and it's, like, you know, it's a million fucking times.
It's a cliche, for sure.
It's a cliche, but, like, she says it, and almost immediately there's payoff for it, so, like, they don't let us stew in what we already know and what we've seen before. So, like, I think they get away with it. And
well, I mean, it's always the thing where it's like, cliches are fine when they're done well.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
they're tried and true, like, effects for a reason. And it's like, you just do it well, then, and, like, who cares?
Yeah, and what I love about it is they get more than the standard amount of mileage out of it,
yes,
in this movie. Especially with the later scene where Abigail is dancing with his
headless body. Yeah, that's a really great scene.
Yeah, let's lead into that. That is, I think where I was, like, just completely sold on the movie. So, I guess just to kind of get to that point, there's a really funny sequence where Dan Stevens reveals himself to her by accident. I love how that's played up, too, because our protagonist, Joey, she first tries to, when she's trying to be nice to Abigail, Abigail asks to be unblindfolded. So she puts her mask on and she unblindfolds her. But then she forgets to tell the others that. And when Dan Stevens goes into the room later to interrogate her, I love how he enters the room without his mask on and he sees her face. And he's like, fuck! And he closes the door again. Like,
he, like, pulls his jacket collar up over his face.
It's the same energy as, like, when you, like, walk in on someone in the bathroom by accident.
It's like, oh, shit, oh, fuck, oh, sorry,
man,
I'm sorry.
Oh, it throws off his vibe throughout that scene. So, like, he was going in there to interrogate her, but now he's kind of embarrassed because he fucked up, too. And, like, there's this really funny, like, back and forth there. But anyway, she reveals that her dad is, like, this evil crime lord. So they're all concerned about that. And then the kill happens. And then they go to actually try and confront her properly this time and, you know, torture some information out of her, which, of course, our protagonist is not about. But they go and do it anyway. And she reveals herself to be of a vampire. And
Bleh.
And very much that kind, too, which is great. But, she does that and, you know, makes a big escape. And, you know, she starts, you know, doing the whole thing where she's playing with them all. And so they're all walking around the house trying to find her. And then a record starts playing. And they head into the room. And it's this really silly, like, little girl's theater with a tiny little stage. And as the record plays, there's a big curtain. She's dancing with the corpse of Angus Cloud's character, the headless corpse, and she's very tiny. Like, we should specify for those who haven't seen, she is itty bitty, and it's a full sized man, like, headless. And there's, like, blood all over her, and she's swinging him around, and it's clearly, like, a big prop dummy.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's so fun. Yeah. Like, I love a big prop dummy.
And
like
she's,
that,
like, bringing his hand up to, like, caress her own cheek. Yeah, it's very funny. Yeah. Well, and leading up to this, too, you know, there's the scene where our protagonists are trying to determine a course of action, and they're debating, like, okay, she's a vampire, but what kind of vampire is she? Like, what do we know about mm-hmm. vampires? And they're, like, going through all the lists. It was like, oh, they don't like crucifixes, they don't like garlic, wooden stakes, all that shit. I love when Dan Stevens tells Catherine Newton to go into the kitchen to look for garlic, and she comes back and she's like, here we are, garlic, and she's got a bag of onions.
Dan Stevens like, that's a fucking bag of onions.
He's like, that's
onions,
a bag of idiot. Fucking onions. And she's like, well, I don't know, I don't cook.
And like, the scene ends too, and like, just for good measure, like, he kicks it, he's like, fucking onions. Yeah. And like, leaves. Dan Stevens like just really like chewing it, you know. Yeah, for that stuff.
I love the himbo in that scene too. Okay. Where they're like, what do we know about vampires? He's like, they're not real.
He's like,
immediately. Yeah, no, we're not doing
that. They're
this.
Not real. It's like they keep talking about it. He's like, nope, I'm not listening to any of this.
This is so stupid. I'm not here for this.
But anyway, like, leading up to this scene where they confront her in the little theater.
Right, which I do, like, I do love too. Another note is like, yeah, she's doing the cheek caressing and everything. But when they enter, she kind of acts like, she wasn't supposed to be seen doing that.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that's really fun. Again, once again, like, the Dan Stevens bit from earlier, it kind of sets up the whole scene to be, like, comedically awkward, where she's like, oh, yeah, you weren't supposed to see that. Like, she was just, like, doing this weird fucked up ritual, because you get the sense that she does that with, like, all of her kills, you know? Like, because, you know, later on, she's been doing this for a long time, so she's just getting more depraved, like, playing with the corpses and doing other fucked up shit. So, like, yeah, them finding her doing that is, like, she's kind of embarrassed by it. And I thought that was really a funny choice.
Yeah.
Anyway, you were saying.
Yeah, well, and then, so they come at her with all of their weapons. Like, they do go and get, like, actual garlic, and, like, Kevin Durant's character has a little crucifix on a chain around his neck, and they sharpen some pool cues into stakes, and she basically just, like, beats all of their asses, like, yeah, with their own weapons just that they've so brought good to kill her. Like, she, like, attacks Catherine Newton, and she, like, rips the like, bag of garlic out of her hand. She, like, does this over-exaggerated, like, running it under her nose, like you'd sniff a cigar or something. She's like... And then, like, throws it away, and then, like, Kevin Durant comes and grabs her off of Catherine Newton, and then she turns around and rips off his crucifix necklace and just starts, like, stabbing him in the chest with it over and over
and
again.
It's, like, really tiny, so, like, you know it's not doing a ton of damage, but, like, it's getting a lot
of especially
blood.
With those big-ass pecs he's got.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
but, yeah, but awesome. But it's very bloody, and, like, yeah, she's just, like, she's holding the crucifix with her bare head, so it's like, okay, garlic does nothing, that does nothing. She grabs the steak out of Dan Stevens' hand and stabs him through the, like, leg with
it's
it.
Like, it's like a fucking John Wick shot. Like the way that the camera flips back around and she, like just immediately, like, disarms him, takes it back, and stabs him in the leg instead. And, once again, like, Dan Stevens is just like, ah, fuck! Like, he's less, like, deeply, like, sorrowful and in pain. He's just real fucking angry about it. Yeah. And, like, that's so funny, man. Like, all three of those characters, like, kind of, like, receive her attack very differently, between, like, total fear from the hacker to the muscle, like, just kind of being, like, a little, like, upset and offended. Like, he's kind of, like, you know, like, he doesn't want to be there. He's you know, he's set up with the whole thing. And Dan Steve's just like, God fucking damn it! Like, and I love that, you know, like, not just having your characterization in the dialogue, but also just in how they react to action.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's good.
Yeah, well, I love how, like, each character plays off of, like, the situation. Like, for example, Sammy, Catherine Newton's character, she gets bitten by Abigail.
Isn't that scene that she gets bit? Or,
no, it's later.
No, I think it's later when they fight her in the hallway.
Yeah.
When she's trying to fly away and drag mm-hmm. Dan Stevens
yeah,
by
right,
his leg.
Right, yeah. Which is, like,
another, yeah,
the next scene.
Yeah, shortly thereafter. Well, that scene where they try to attack her at first, what I love about it is that she doesn't kill anybody in that scene. She just fucking whips their asses, and then they all run back downstairs. Yeah,
it's sort of like Monty Python. I was like, run away! Like,
yeah, exactly. Well, and Melissa Barrera's down there because she's like, no, I'm not going
to
try to go kill
I'm
this.
Talk
like,
to it. I'm gonna
yeah,
do
I'm not going to try to go kill this vampire. Like, we got to figure something else out. So they go off. They get their asses whipped. and then they come back all like bloodied and beaten and stuff, and she's just like,
"Told you."
Yeah. But yeah, not long after that, you know, they're splitting up and they're looking for they're trying to find a way out, and they're trying to find Abigail, and I like the part where Catherine Newton falls into the swimming pool full of bodies. That reminded me a lot of the scene where Samara Weaving falls into the pit of bodies in Ready or Not.
And she angrily crawls out. Like, yeah, it's good.
Yeah, almost one for one. And she's just like covered in filth.
Yeah. I was just thinking that we had 2 weeks in a row of people falling into body pits.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah. It's a war.
Yeah, this was a little more over the top.
Yeah.
The tone is entirely slimy.
Yeah, wetter. Yeah, much wetter, I was going to say.
I do like it. I do like a wet scene.
But yes, and it's after that where what Melissa Barrera realizes, like, okay, all of the weapons that you've tried don't work, but when we sedated her earlier, when we kidnapped her, like, that did work. Like, she actually did go out. So I've got another syringe of that sedative, so if we can sedate her, then we'll be okay. So that's why they split up and they're looking for her. That's when Catherine Newton falls into the swimming pool, and they all end up back in, like, the stairwell.
There's a really funny scene after she falls into the pit, though, because they're all on, like, radio communications,
right,
earpieces or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, Melissa Barrera hears Sammy, Catherine Newton's character, screaming, and she's, like, rushing to see what's wrong, and then suddenly the himbo starts yelling too, but it's just because he got a splinter.
Yeah. Well, and then Abigail shows up behind him and he screams again very girlishly, and they just like totally write it off because
Boy,
he was screaming ball, yeah screaming about the
now.
Splinter before that culminates in them all fighting in like the stairwell. Like Kevin Durand gets like thrown down a couple of stories. And that's when Abigail is like trying to drag Dan Stevens off up the stairs. She's like flying away, but they do manage to subdue her and sedate her. And that's when they put her in, they trap her in the old elevator cage down in the basement. And that's the scene where we talked about earlier where she, you know, reveals who they all are and tries to bargain with Dan Stevens to let her out. And she does.
She tries to bargain with everyone.
That's right. Yeah. Well, yeah, she tries to turn them against each other. Like, if you let me out, I'll let two of you live. And Kevin Durand's like, which two? And she's like, that's a surprise. And then a minute later, she's like, okay, that offer just expired. Now only one of you gets to live. It's whoever lets me out. But what I love is that scene ends with, like, Dan Stevens, like, watching her, and she tries to bargain with him and, you know, tells him about the Agatha Christie book that opens up the secret tunnel or whatever. And, you know, then she's like, we made a deal's a deal, you have to let me out now. And he has a little moment of gloating where he just like locks the cage, which I don't know why it wasn't locked already. I guess the bar was across it, but like the lock wasn't turned, whatever. And he's like gloating, he's like, ha 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 ha, I'm a liar, like, you really believe that I was gonna let you out of there? And she just like kicks the door off of the elevator. Like, she didn't need
such a short moment to just be like, or yeah, because he says like, yeah, well, that offer expired, you know? Like,
oh,
he plays the
right
line back at her, and he's like, you know, like, he thinks he's the shit in that moment, and she's like, fuck you, and she just kicks the
door off.
Yeah, great. I love a smug character that just immediately gets undercut. Like, always a treat, always a joy. Absolutely.
Happens a lot in this movie.
Yeah. And it's great every time. So let's see, they get to the library, doesn't work. What's next?
Well, there's a really...
That's right, there's more to that scene.
Yeah,
she kicks the door down. And,
yeah, she kicks the door down, she, like, pounces on him, and she's, like, trying to kill him, and Melissa Barrera runs in, and she starts, like, ripping, like, boards off the windows, and just, like, a little bit of sunlight shines down on Dan Stevens and it catches Abigail in the arm and her arm explodes. And like she was holding a grenade.
An example of several scenes where this movie is just not afraid to beat the shit out of this tiny girl.
Yeah.
And it's so funny. Like, tiny little creature, she's like scrabbling on top of him. She's about to like rip him apart. And then, yeah, just her arm just blows off like it was hit by a fucking 50 caliber rifle. And like, it's, and she's like screaming, and like they don't shy away.
Extended,
yeah, like she's like screaming, and like her fucking nub is like slowly like growing, like,
yeah, you can see it's starting
back
to grow back, and that's, and a really nasty, cool practical. Yeah, that's a practical
it's
effect.
It's just like a
too,
piece of meat like being shunted up through a tube. Like, they don't do the CG grow over shit. Like, nah, they do it like they do it for real, and it's awesome. And also in the stairwell scene before, I gotta mention too, during that sequence, when she's trying to drag Dan Stevens back up and they reveal that she can fly, like, that's when the muscle like guy comes back into the room and absolutely bodies her. And it's so good. Like, it's like he's at the top of the stairs and he just leaps and just fucking rocks her into the ground, and it is hilarious just seeing this. Like, this movie gets so much mileage out of like grown ass people like beating the shit out of a little girl, and it's very funny.
Because she's like, not a little girl. She's a monster.
Monster.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's
hundreds
of years old.
Exactly.
Don't make it weird. But like, it's really funny. It's really funny every time. So yes, after that scene where her arm is blown off, great way to set up that sunlight makes vampires explode in this world. And it comes up at the right time too, because we've seen that like garlic doesn't work.
All the other stuff doesn't work, but sunlight...
Stakes work, maybe, but we don't know, but, like, it's too hard to stake her. She's just too fast.
Yeah.
But sunlight.
But sunlight is your tried and true. Sunlight is your tried and true. Mm-hmm. And that's, so that's why they run into the library, because it's got that big window, so there's, like, a beam of sunlight that they can stand in where they know that they'll be safe for a little while to plan and strategize. They do so. They decide to split up again because Catherine Newton is like, if we can find a power source, then I can short it out and it should open up like all of the like security windows and doors and stuff and allow us to get out.
Which Dan Stevens says, I can't remember if it's Dan Stevens or the muscle, but one of them says, do you want to unplug the house?
Yeah, I think that's Dan Stevens who says that. He's
stupid
like,
line.
Do you want to unplug the house?
So funny. You want to unplug the house? Anyway, moving
it's
on.
Like, yeah, basically.
Yeah.
So they split up to go search for the power source or whatever to the house. Melissa Barrera and Dan Stevens go off together. Catherine Newton and Kevin Durand go off together. And that's when we get the reveal that the bite that she received from Abigail is not as harmless as they thought.
Yeah, they got to do the 2 weeks to retirement bit, too, where it's just her and the muscle. And the muscle just takes a moment to be like, I've got you. We're going to get out of here. And he shows his humanity. And then they kill
and then
him.
She yeah
it
then
feels
she
like
turns
the exact same move that the sniper guy and Melissa Burr had like,
oh yeah very similar
yeah
like, yeah Don Rickles
show that they're a really good person and then rip them away
they have some solidarity together. It's like he's ex-military, she's ex-military, like they don't trust anybody else, they're gonna be the ones to get out of there.
Just
he walks around the corner and is just and immediately has his throat ripped out.
Yeah,
I liked his character. I would have liked to have seen more of him. I thought that actor was really charismatic too.
I will say I like the flavor they give to Catherine Newton getting bitten and like continually like being anxious about it and like testing the waters. Like for example, like there's sunlight and she like cautiously puts an arm out
like just her finger into the sunlight. She like is her finger gonna explode? It's like, no, okay, then it must be it must be fine. She's not gonna turn into a vampire. But then it's revealed, psych, she is gonna turn into a vampire.
But not only a vampire,
a puppet
for Abigail. And I found that like a fun little kind of twist on expectations.
Yeah, kind of, well,
she's a thrall. She's a familiar. You know, she's been, you know.
Well, no, familiars are not bitten. Yeah, familiars are just humans. But yes, that is it. You're right, though. It is classic vampire lore that if a vampire just bites you, then you become like a sub vampire, like the vampire's thrall,
and while then the other vampire to become is the dom.
To become the exactly. To become a full vampire, you have to then drink the blood of the vampire that bit you. This is all very classic bullshit. Vampire lore. But yes, so she becomes a puppet of the Abigail, lore. The deep lore. Mm.
Wow.
She becomes the deep lore, bleh. So Catherine Newton becomes a vampire thrall, a puppet of Abigail, and kills Kevin Durand, and then we get a really nice little dance sequence.
I love that.
Where Abigail is dancing on her stage, and it's intercut with Catherine Newton doing the same dance.
You know, remind
To Danzig. That shit was so funny to me, because we see Abigail, like, putting down the needle on, like, this ancient gramophone.
Yeah, and you know, all with, like, we've this heard her dance to in the classical past
music.
Is
like, Tchaikovsky and shit. Yeah, so she, like, puts, and it's, like, it looks like an old-looking, like,
dusty record,
and it's one of these just fucking ancient old gramophones, and she puts it on, and it's fucking dancing.
Perfect.
So good.
Her dancing, and, you know, cutting between Abigail and the other, like dancing with the puppetry.
Yeah, really, I liked that a lot.
Yeah, it was a much better interpretation of a film that came out a decade ago now with the dance number with Michael C. Hall and Gamer. Do you remember that?
Oh yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah. It's like that, the puppets, you know.
I'm a defender of Gamer. Yeah. I think that movie's kind of good, actually.
By the same two people.
Yeah, it's Neville Dean and Taylor. Yeah, I haven't seen
we
it
might
in fucking
have to
forever.
That on the podcast,
dude, I'd be so
point.
Down to talk about Gamer.
God,
that movie, dude, Gamer.
That movie rules. I watched
Gamer
it for
rules,
the first time
yeah.
like a year or two ago and enjoyed the shit out of it.
Yeah, Gamer is fun.
Gamer's.
What I love about that dance scene is, like, there's, like, little bits of sunlight coming through.
Oh, yeah, and she's, like, steaming a little bit.
Yeah, she's, like, smoking throughout, and,
feels like they kind of broke their own rules a little bit. Should have caused her to explode.
Texture.
But it's a nice...
Cool, yeah.
But it's a nice aesthetic, so I don't mind it. Yeah. It looks nice,
You know, it's limited sunlight. You know, it's not enough.
Melissa Barrera and Dan Stevens stumble across her, and she chases them... And how do they kill her? We just saw this movie.
We did just see this movie. It's true.
Why am I?
She runs back into the library, and they take the reflective plate that she was.
Oh, that's right. Yes,
and she fucking explodes, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
I like the nice little Chekhov silver platter that they set up before that because Kevin Durant hands it to her. He's like, "Yeah, I'm not worried about you turning because I saw your reflection in this a little while ago." And she like looks at herself and sees how like gross and grimy she is. She's like, "Ugh." Disgusting, and tosses it aside. And then, Melissa Barrera picks it up.
To come up again, too. It's really organic.
It's great, really, really great Chekhov's gun. And use it to redirect the sunlight onto her, and she explodes.
Just detonates. And it's beautiful. Yeah, it's right out of Ready or Not.
Ready or Not, I was going to say Impossible.
Because
to...
you know what? It's great in Ready or Not. It's great in this. Keep using it.
It's great in everything.
Yes,
I've never
go back to that well a couple times in this movie.
Yes,
I've never seen a movie and not loved watching somebody explode into a fine mist of
big
blood.
Blood explosion.
Dude, I've never not enjoyed that.
No, it's true. And there's a lot of series. It's getting more and more popular, and I'm here for it. I'm super pro blood explosion.
Yeah. Well, there's another one not too long after that. Yes. Just to try to move things along a little bit, they find. Like the security room in the house, and
find the secret passageway
does open. See, this is what I love. They do where it's like, you idiot, there's no fucking, you know, like pull a book secret passage, and then the door does open later on. So we get to have both. We get to enjoy this.
They don't
timeline.
Find it though, it just opens on its own.
Yeah, they don't deserve that. And then they go in and they see there's security cameras, and they've been watched this whole time. And oh my god,
fucking...
it's one Carlo Esposito. Lambert, has been, you know, like he's in cahoots, and he's a vampire too. And he looks great. Once again, really good makeup.
2 months ago.
Two years ago.
He's been on the grind. He's been on the vampire grind for a little bit. And he's the one who,
every time that Abigail does this little game where she rounds up some of her father's enemies and traps them, it's like, he's always the one who has to do it. And he's like, I'm tired of it.
I want
to
own it all.
He's like, I want to own it all. Yeah, he's like, he tells Dan Stevens, he's like, you help me kill Abigail and her father, and we can take the whole thing together, but you're gonna need, like, a little bit of an upgrade or whatever, and, you know, offers to turn him, and Dan Stevens is like, you know what? Fuck it. Bite me.
Yeah. And I like this, too, because, like, our protagonist, she's against it from the beginning.
Of course.
And so, Juan Carlos Esposito, with his, you know, his vampire power, is just, like, casually holding her against the side of the wall, bops her head against it, and she's thrown to the ground.
Yeah.
She just is forced to witness without being able to do anything. And this, to me, is the most Wesker shit. Like, this is, like, just pure Resident Evil.
Yeah.
There's the secret camera room. They've been watching shit the whole time. Yeah. There's a betrayal. He takes the juice. And then suddenly, Dan Stevens, who has just been a piece of shit this whole movie, is now a piece of shit with power.
Yeah.
And I love it. I fucking love it, man. And of course, immediately, he betrays Juan Carlos Esposito and fucking stabs him in the back. And
in the heart,
in
really,
the heart, with a stake, and he explodes.
And he explodes,
and it's awesome. And I love it. I was just so fucking giddy because, again, I clearly, like, throughout this entire episode, probably to an annoying degree, we've all been harping on how much we love Dan Stevens, and setting up Dan Stevens to be like a nasty, evil rat-faced vampire is using an actor perfectly.
Yeah,
like, yes. Thank you.
At that point in the movie, he is really hamming it up.
Yeah.
And it rules. It's great.
Yeah. It's so good, man.
Yeah, he becomes a cartoon villain after that. Yeah.
He should.
And man, I just want to say for a second, I love Giancarlo Esposito always, and he's great in this, but I really hope that someday soon a director is going to cast him against type, because I want to see him in a role that's not just hardened crime lord. You know what I mean? Because it's like, man, you think back...
He's so good at it, but like...
I mean, no, he's great at it because of Breaking Bad, but I feel like because he got so big off of that, that's what everybody casts him
as. It's the only color they
let him paint. And it's like, you look back to like his, like, yes, small role, but like... important role and like Do the Right Thing, and he's like, man, I saw a video on Twitter of him not long ago, him like cutting it up on the street with somebody in like Brooklyn or whatever, who just like stopped him on the street to talk, and he's like, he's got like such great like comedic act, like chops, like he's like such a funny guy, and I would love to see someone put him in a movie where he's not just Gus Fring. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I liked that they gave him some vampire stuff. Yeah, I don't know if you saw the interview with him recently where he was saying like before he was cast on Breaking Bad, like he was struggling to make ends meet.
Oh, I'm sure.
And was like actively planning his suicide.
Oh,
before he got cast.
And that's dark. Like,
and, like, Breaking Bad saved him from all of that. And so, you know, with that context, like, it makes sense that he's okay going back to that world.
Oh, yeah, and I'm sure, you know? I mean, he is great at it. I just know that he, having seen, like, that he can do more than I'm very happy that Breaking Bad gave him the opportunity to, like become like a regularly working actor again. I'm always happy to see him in stuff.
Yeah.
I just, you know, waiting on that right director who recognizes that he can do more than just Gus Fring.
Yeah.
And I'm waiting for it. It'll happen. But anyway, we get then, you know, our final climax in the library with Melissa Barrera against Dan Stevens, and Abigail shows up, and she and Melissa Barrera use the little bit of rapport they were able to make earlier in the film to decide to team up against Dan Stevens as the much greater threat now. That's a pretty fun fight sequence. Mm-hmm. a lot more of a grown man beating the piss out of a little girl. Yeah, yeah.
At one point, she gets almost, like, suplexed, where her back just goes...
Yeah, he, like, reverse, slams her on her head, like, breaks her neck, and she just, like, folds in half, and then she's having to, like, pull herself back together while he's, like...
Which, yeah, she does the Exorcist crab walk for a second.
Yeah, kind of.
I like that.
Well, you know, because she's a ballerina, she's a dancer, so...
And again, the
we haven't really talked too much about that, about the ballerina thing being her whole shtick, and she's, you know, when she's chasing them earlier, she's, like, doing... I don't know the proper terms for those, I'm sure you do, Cleaver.
Namaste.
Those long, the leaps over, over people.
Yeah.
But eventually they are able to triumph over Dan Stevens. I don't know why Abigail straight up tells him that if he wants to kill her, he has to drain her.
Well, because we as audience members need to understand what is about to happen. Like,
sure.
Like we need to and frankly, like in this case, I think it's kind of a dumb line, but... You know, the movie is kind of leaning into dumb, so I'm pretty happy to allow it. But
seems like why would you tell him how to kill you?
Other than
because the audience needs to know.
Yeah, but frankly, in this case, like we kind of do. Like I guess, if I didn't have that context for that scene, it would have been kind of confusing as to why like he keeps just trying to like suck her blood out, and she just keeps getting back up. And I like that. It kind of says without saying what comes next that like. Dan Stevens is—he's only just been bit. He's kind of an inferior, shitty vampire. Like,
well, see, that's why I wish. That's why I wish
he's trying to suck all of her blood out, but he can't because he's just not good enough yet. So he has to keep going back to the well.
Well, see, that's why I went. That's why I kind of wish like she didn't tell him because it would have been really funny with him like continually overpowering her but not knowing how to kill her.
Just getting more and more
frustrated because she keeps getting back up. It's like, what do I have to do? What do I have to do? Like that would be fun. I would like that a little bit better than her just being like, if you want to kill me, then you have to suck me dry. She's hundreds of years old, folks.
Shut up.
But eventually they are able to, through the power of friendship and teamwork or whatever, they're able to defeat Dan Stevens and explode him by shoving a stake into his heart. And
which takes the power of both of them.
Yes, exactly, because Abigail's not strong enough, but then Melissa Barrera comes along and lends her strength, and they're able to drive the stake into his heart, and he goes, oh shit, and then explodes.
Yeah.
And then Abigail is like, okay, you can go now, but then, oh my god, Jamiroquai shows up. I knew he was going to show up the whole movie. I was like, he's going to show up. He's going to show up.
You want to see the Vampire Lord. You can't not show the
I was
Vampire
so
Lord.
Disappointed that they didn't have him wearing his big dumb hat.
Yeah, I agree.
Because,
I
like, we like... see the statue of him in his big dumb hat, and then they find, like, the painted mural of him in his big dumb hat.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, surely the Vampire Lord, Jamiroquai, is going to show up. With his big dumb hat, and he's gonna dance, and all the furniture is gonna move around.
Oh, man, I wish
they should have just honestly, if they were really down to clown, and they were really down to like take the joke to its logical conclusion, they should have just hired Jamiroquai to play the Vampire Lord at the end. Can you imagine how funny that would have been?
That would have been incredible.
Jamiroquai not, you know?
Like, it's just, like, it's such a small role.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a small little bit
part.
I will say, I do like
the charisma of the guy we got.
Yeah, he was fine.
He's good. He was Ozymandias in the Zack Snyder Watchmen.
Was he really?
Yeah. Oh,
well,
Jesus,
well,
yeah.
He's certainly not Matthew Bad in this role. He's good.
Yeah, he's fine. He shows up and kind of reconciles with Abigail, I guess. There's a whole thing about, like, my dad doesn't love me anymore.
Yeah, after she and the protagonist have to kind of step in and do the whole thing.
Yeah, and like he's gonna kill Melissa Barrera, and Abigail Stobbs is like, she was here when you weren't, Dad. And then he's like, but I'm here now, Abigail. And
I think it's really dumb and corny, and I love it.
It's fine. It's fine.
I think it's good.
Yeah.
It's hokey. It's fine. It's whatever.
Yeah.
And Melissa Barrera is allowed to leave, and she goes off to supposedly reconcile with her son.
To suck on her little lollipop in the...
Yeah, that's right.
Why would you phrase it like that?
Because she finds what she does.
That's what she does.
Yeah, she finds the candy that she's, you know...
That's a lollipop.
All right,
anyway. Yeah, and she sucks on it as she's driving away. Because we didn't really mention, because she's an ex-addict, she's replaced it with, like, candy. When she gets cravings, she eats candy. Mm. So, yeah. And then at one point, she's, like, looking for candy, but she doesn't have any, no! And so then at the end, she finds that she does still have one of those little dum-dum suckers in her pocket. And, yeah.
Glad I'm not addicted to candy.
Yeah, but you are a dumb sucker.
Boom! Yeah. Fucking got it!
I don't know how to come back from that.
There is no coming back from that, which means I think we need to rate the movie.
That's fine.
I'll start. Strong 4 out of 5. I enjoyed this. I had a lot of fun. Good cast. Lots of laughs to be had. Somewhat predictable, I guess, but a really enjoyable outing from the boys at Radio Silence.
They're back.
I would also give this a 4 out of 5. I had a lot of fun with this movie. Like I was saying, like, as we were walking out of the theater, I feel like a lot of the heavy lifting was casting. Like, this is a stacked cast,
mm-hmm.
all giving great performances. But I don't want to undercut the writing either, yeah. because the writing is also incredible, and I'm so glad we got some great practical effects. Just a fun movie. I don't know if it's quite as good as Ready or Not. It's
I don't think so.
On the same level, almost. Because, like I said before, like, doing ensembles is another beast compared to kind of a solo-focused movie. So it's apples and oranges in some ways, but it's a great movie. Go check it out. It's definitely worth seeing in the theater.
Golden apples and golden oranges. I thought it was a treat, a joy. To touch on Tisa's bit. I agree. It hits a lot of tropes. But I appreciate some good dumb fun, and it leans into that all well, and it flows well because of it. I think a strong 4.5. Why not? You know, fuck it. I think I gave Ready or Not a 5. I don't remember. It's been a very long time. But I didn't revisit it too. But loved it. Loved the cast. And you know, to sort of Ben's point, like I think the cast is really great, and they're really well used also, and they're given the opportunity to give really good performances.
Right? Yeah,
because of the writing, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. So yeah, no, solid movie. Fuck yeah, loved it.
Well, that will give Abigail an average rating of 4.2 out of 5. So like Ben said, definitely worth seeing in the theater. I think we saw it in Dolby, and it, as always, it looked and sounded great.
Yeah.
Next week. We're doing a Patreon pick.
Yes.
This pick is coming from our honorary pod boy, Micah. And Micah has picked,
better not be Twilight 2.
It's not, okay, thankfully.
Well, anything's better.
He's not being that mean to us this time. We're going to be talking about a 2005 J-horror film called Reincarnation.
Sick.
It is by Takashi Shimizu, he did all the Grudge movies.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Which I haven't actually seen any of those other than that shitty reboot that we covered a couple years ago.
I just watched the original, like, 3 days ago. It was okay.
That's a blind spot of J horror for me. But this is another film that he did. Again, it's called Reincarnation.
Well, I won't hold a grudge against.
So we're gonna be talking about that next week.
We have Civil War.
Yes, we have some prediction results from Civil War last week.
Let's start with the box office. I predicted $22 million. TC predicted $15 million. Cleveview predicted $3 million. Opening weekend, it did $25
million. Good. I'm glad I was wrong.
I'm always happy number one at the box office.
Awesome.
Wasn't competing against much, but... That's true. I mean, hey, that's a for a movie that cost $50 million, like making half of that back opening weekend, not bad, not a bad return.
I mean, again, it's the biggest budget movie for A24 yet. So like,
yeah, that is one of their bigger opening weekends for sure.
And good on Alex Scarlett not to bomb with such a big budget.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay, Rotten Tomatoes. I predicted 71. TC said 68. Cleveview said 75. Huh. Right now it's sitting at an 81.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, good, I guess. I'm surprised, I must say. I thought people would dislike it more.
And Twitter discourse is not critic discourse.
This is true.
Dang,
so true.
So, Cleveview, you get that one.
Hell yeah.
And then for collective rating, I predicted 3.7. TC said 3.6. Cleveview said 3.5. We gave it a 4. Yeah. So I got that one as well.
Nice.
We'll go ahead and skip Kill Count.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't really make sense for a movie like this.
Agreed.
But for who would give it the highest rating, I said myself. TC, you said yourself. Cleveview said Tease. And none of us got it right.
Yeah. It was Cleve.
It was me, yeah.
Surprisingly, because I know Cleve was grumbling the most on the way into it, and you ended up liking
anxious.
It the most.
Yeah, trepidatious is what I had said. Yeah, like I...
You were pretty down on it.
And up on it when I came out.
Yeah.
And you know what? Same for Abigail. It's been a... Honestly, it's been about 4 movies of that. Like, I didn't want to... I wasn't really all that interested in... Immaculate. I wasn't all that interested in First Omen. I wasn't all that interested in Civil War. I was worried about Civil War not being good, and I wasn't all that like keen on Abigail going.
Yeah,
in.
There's been
all
a lot of pleasant
those,
surprises in the
I
last
have come
few
out of
weeks.
It quite happy and pleased.
Only real stinker is Godzilla.
Here's
to
that trend continuing with Strangers Chapter 1.
We'll see.
I got a really defeated look on my face.
Do we have additional comments or additional predictions?
I said the discourse around this movie will be worse / more annoying than the actual movie.
True.
100%.
And marketing. You could say that for it, too.
Yes, especially with those fucking AI posters.
Ugh.
Fuck.
Gross, man.
Terrible.
Dog shit.
Tease, you said, the trailer makes me nervous about a Brit writer... having anything substantial to say, or even a true understanding about American politics, but Garland is a strong conceptual writer, so I'm hoping this fear is unfounded. I will enjoy this most out of the three of us.
Well, yeah. I was wrong about that last part, but I'm pretty much right about the rest of it. Like, I do think I was concerned about Alex Garland's political understanding of the U.S., and he avoided that by making it... not particularly political, so...
Probably for the best.
Oh, also,
outside of the politics of the image.
Well, I read some accounts from him after we did the podcast, and he had said that he did specifically ally California with Texas to remove the political, like, element of it.
Well, yeah, right. I mean, that was pretty much what I said in allowing the viewer to place whatever politics they... Yeah, I saw he was talking about the, like... That Nick Offerman's president was like so fashy that even political enemies of Texas and California would ally together to take him down.
Generous,
which
it didn't really
I
come
yeah
off that
seems pretty idealistic to me, but especially
Offerman came out as a little Trumpish.
Yeah,
but it wasn't like.
Well, I guess they play it up with Stephen McKinley Henderson talking about how he like abolished intelligence agencies, like extended he's in a third term, and that he ordered airstrikes against American citizens. I guess that was supposed to be the indicators that this president is a bad guy.
Yeah,
but.
But you also mentioned that the trailer music sounds like Ben Salisbury is back scoring another Garland film.
Correct. I was.
True. Yeah. Cleve, you said states' rights? More like states' wrongs. Which,
I mean...
Yeah, I don't know.
I guess.
Well, folks, go see and decide for yourselves. Whatever. Let's get paid. It's time for a sponsor.
Sponsor time. Check the shelf and see what time it is. It's sponsor time. Here we go. This episode was brought to you by Classic Carl's Classic Cars and Carbonara. He's got the spaghetti. He's got the...
carburetor.
Yeah, the carburetor, the carbonara, and the sayonara. I'm done with this.
The only place where you can eat a carbonara off of a carburetor.
A car.
Thanks, Classic Carl's Classic Cars and Carbonara. Alright, that'll do it for us this week. If you like the show, leave us a 5-star rating and review wherever you're listening to this. Become a Patreon subscriber at patreon.com/podpeoplepod. Shout out to our honorary pod boys, Sam, Zach, Micah, and Mitchell. If you join the Patreon at the $10 level, you get to be one of them, and you can recommend movies for us to talk about on the show, like what you'll be getting from us next week. So do that. You can also follow us at letterboxd.com/podpeoplepod, where you'll find a list of all the films we've talked about on the show with our average ratings and links to those reviews. I was thinking of something topical to recommend this week, so I'm going to recommend, you like fun vampire stuff? Well, listen to some fun vampiric black metal. Ben and I went to a show earlier this week, and one of the bands we saw, Ebony Pendant, was very vampiric. And they were wearing frilly shirts and capes, but they were bringing the riffs. So go check out Ebony Pendant for some raw vampiric black metal.
Well, my recommendation is going to be something we've definitely talked about on the podcast, but it's worth, you know, mentioning for people who haven't gotten around to it. Go watch the What We Do in the Shadows TV show.
Oh, yeah,
it's
absolutely.
It's fucking phenomenal. It's so funny. Honestly, I think I like it more than the movie.
But you should go watch that, too, and then listen to our podcast episode about it, if you haven't.
They do so many funny bits on it. Colin Robinson is one of the greatest comedic TV characters of the last few years. Just great stuff.
Cleve, you got anything this week? The look of panic on your face says
no. I don't have anything this week. Find your own recommendation.
Cleveland recommends silence.
I recommend nothing. In protest of... nothing. Just go and, go find your own fucking recommendation. Fuck you.
Cleveland recommends the oblivion of the void.
Yes.
No stimuli. Nothing. Embrace the oblivion of long sleep. Good night. Free.